Scientists have been mapping geochemical signatures across Cape York in far north Queensland in the hope of identifying the precise origin of Indigenous remains and artefacts. The map, published this week in the journal Geoarchaeology, plots a specific mineral fingerprint known as a strontium ratio and its variations right across the Cape. Researchers say it could assist efforts to repatriate Indigenous remains from museums around the world. Jonathan Webb is the ABC Science Editor. Hello, Jonathan.
Good morning, friend.
I'm sure this is valuable if it can be successfully applied, but I don't know what we're talking about. What's a strontium ratio and why does it help identify Indigenous remains?
Well, a strontium is an element which is found in the geology of the area, in the very ancient rocks, actually, pre-Cambrian rocks from from this region of Cape York. And what the scientists have managed to do is to map this ratio and how it varies across that region. Now, that what that ratio is basically the different concentrations of two different isotopes, two different forms of strontium, strontium 87 and 86, definitely two of my top four strontium isotopes. Yeah. But this is a ratio that reflects the rocks in particular regions, and it does vary across the area. It depends on the geology of a region as to how useful it will be, but they have found predictable variations across different sections of Cape York, and they measured them not just in the rocks themselves, but in the surface water, in the vegetation, and in animals that come from those regions, and they found a strong correlation there. So plants and animals and people that live on the land will acquire this same ratio, a kind of matching ratio of strontium in the traces that they have in their bones and so on. And so that's why if we have remains that are unidentified in terms of where exactly they come from, that are living in museums around the country, measuring this ratio might help us to locate roughly, or help us to narrow down where they come from.
Okay, so talk me through that, because we think that about 25% of indigenous remains in Australian museums are of unknown origin, not to mention the British ones. So how does this actually help? Do we then work out which ones might have traces of strontium within them, and yeah, they're at least getting closer to...
Yeah, so if a test can be done, then the scientists say it's not necessarily going to instantly tell you an exact location, but if we know that, say, they come from Cape York, it might rule out some regions over others, and so it does help with narrowing down the process. It does present a bit of a catch-22, though, because, of course, if you're going to take a small portion of the remains and test them, you should ideally get permission from the community where they came from, and you can't know what that community is exactly until you've, you know, this evidence might help with that process. So there is a committee that these researchers and Indigenous owners are trying to establish to help with the repatriation process, so that, for example, you might be able to get permission from, you know, several communities from which the remains might have come, get their permission, and then do the process and try and narrow it down further.
So for that process to work, we'd have to map the whole of Australia?
Well, if there is the potential here to develop a wider map, which could be useful across the whole country. As I mentioned, it depends on the geology. So, for example, in Central Australia, apparently the geology is a lot more homogeneous. There's less variation, perhaps, in the strontium ratio, but it still might be useful. And so there is interest in expanding the map, and it might also unlock other questions. There is a lot of scientific interest in the way that the very first inhabitants migrated and spread across the country. And so if we can find ancient remains and then do this testing and discover that perhaps people whose remains were found in this part of the country at this time have a ratio that reflects, in fact, the geology of a place further north, then we might be able to start to get a date on the rate of migration and the way that Australia was populated that very first time.
Okay, it's an interesting concept. I wonder, it seems like a lot of room for imprecision, but anyway, I guess it's a start.
It's certainly very difficult science, but this is the first time such a map has been formed, and it's a pretty comprehensive map of all of Cape York, so about 300,000 square kilometres stretching from Cairns all the way up to the top, and there is a pretty good distribution of sections in that map, which you can see in the story that was up on the news website this week in the ABC Science section.
Okay, great. On another story, the BBC reported last night on the eve of International Women's Day that the European Particle Physics Agency, CERN, that's C-E-R-N, that's how I say it, isn't it,
that's
CERN,
right,
has cut its ties with a physicist who made headlines around the world after complaining that physics was becoming sexist against men.
Yes. This was quite a
how
remarkable story.
How significant is this?
Late last year. And it certainly marks some progress that's being made and also progress that's yet to be made on this question of women in STEM. This is a physicist who, at a seminar actually about the issue of gender equality at CERN, made comments that were pretty outrageous and were criticised right around the world, suggesting that not only are women innately less capable at physics and claimed to show data.
Because everyone knows that's true.
Everyone knows that's true. He even claimed to show data that the papers published by women physicists have less impact than those published by male physicists. He showed cartoons that apparently made light of the contribution of women trying to make more of a role for women in science. And as you mentioned, actually claimed that physics itself was becoming sexist against men, and obviously he wasn't happy about that. CERN suspended him at the time and ran an investigation, and now they have come to their conclusion, and his status of guest professor at CERN, which of course is the place that runs the big collider, the Large Hadron Collider, has been revoked, so he no longer has a role there.
It's hard to imagine someone doing this in this day and age, but here is Professor Alessandro Strumia attempting to explain his position. This is in an interview published on YouTube last December.
So I compared the average of hired women with the average of hired men to see how much is the discrimination against women, but I found an effect that maybe goes in the opposite direction.
So meaning, so that people who might not understand, so for the same level job, women were getting positions with much lower citations than men who were applying for the same job.
Okay, that's the explanation. All right, let's move on, shall we? Jonathan, finally, you've got some special ABC Science news this morning for us. You're looking for a cadet from regional Australia to come and join the team in Sydney for 6 months. Tell us a bit more about this.
Yeah, this is the Darren Osborne cadetship, which has been set up in memory of a wonderful journalist who was on the team at ABC Science. Indeed, he was the news editor for the ABC Science website, who sadly died in 2015 from brain cancer and is very, very much missed by his colleagues here at ABC Science. I was never lucky enough to meet Darren, but also by his family. His wife Renee and two wonderful kids have all supported this effort, which is a really wonderful thing that we are able to do. So we're looking for someone who comes from outside the big cities, from regional Australia, who is really passionate about science and is a great storyteller, and they'll be able to join the team for 6 months as our Darren Osborne cadet.
Okay, and we've got some of Darren talking to Walid Ali about the Chinese space effort on Summer Breakfast in 2012. Let's hear from Darren.
Look, the Chinese have for more than a decade now been building up a human space program. But where they've really been making great strides is both in their rocketry and also in their unmanned spaceflight program. They launched two spacecraft that were essentially prototype space stations, but they demonstrated for the first time that they can dock in space. Now, that sounds like a fairly easy maneuver. I mean, if you're backing the car in the garage.
Oh, yeah, I do it all the time.
Yeah, and you need to put the trailer on, although then getting the trailer backwards is another matter. Mm. So, the Chinese are definitely ambitious, and they see an opening. It's 40 years this year since the Americans left the moon, the last time that they had footprints there on Apollo 17. That'll be December 1972. So the Chinese see this is a great way of demonstrating that they are a very, very progressive nation by sending astronauts there themselves.
Very prescient, Darren Osborne.
Yeah, you can only imagine what Darren would have made of the fact that China has now put a lander on that far side of the moon, as we've discussed here on Breakfast. So, yeah, we'd love to have someone who has just that kind of passion for science to come and join us for 6 months. You can find the details about it on the ABC Careers website, and there's 3 weeks for people to apply. The deadline's the 28th of March.
Okay, so abc.net.au/careers if you're interested. What a great opportunity, and deadline is 28th of March. Get onto it. Jonathan, thank you very much.
Cheers, Fran.
Dr. Jonathan Webb is the ABC Science Editor, and you can learn all the science news here on the ABC on Twitter, like links to the Cape York map story, for instance, and the Darren Osborne cadetship. It's a very important announcement today. You're listening to Breakfast. It's 8:45.